welcome to Chit Chat Money. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer interview industry experts and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Money is a CCM Media Group podcast. Ryan and Brett are also general partners at Arch Capital, and Arch Capital may have positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Money by Ryan or Brett or any other podcast guests is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Welcome in. This is the Tuesday Not So Deep Dive episode on Chit Chat Money. I'm here with Ryan Henderson as always, and we got Brad Freeman joining the show today every other week as he's been doing for the past year. So Brad, we're talking Amazon. I can't say on this one, have you heard of it? But do you follow the stock at all?
No, it's a rainforest and some. No, I'm going to stop making lame jokes now. But I have heard of Amazon. I have used Amazon before, so I guess for anecdotal evidence, we'll have some stuff to talk about.
Ryan's in the same boat. We're everyone knows what Amazon is, so I don't think we have to explain it too much. But Ryan's going to go into the details and probably going to. Well, I've seen his notes. He's going to hit some of the, you know, nitty gritty of what the actual business is because they own quite a few things. But first, let's talk about our sponsor today, and that is Potential Multibaggers. So Potential Multibaggers is an investing service. And the aim of the service, you've heard us before, is to find stocks that have the chance to go up 10 times over the next 10 years or compound at 26% per year. Now, this means making bets on high growth companies, something like Cloudflare at $39 a share, Upstart at $128 a share. They've been around since 2017. Chris, or his pseudonym From Growth to Value, have been running the service since 2017, and they have a fantastic track record over the long term. They pick high growth stocks, and to hold them for a long period of time, of course, they have to continue performing to hold them. So Chris, the man behind it, he calls this buy and verify. So sometimes a stock will be in the portfolio and they're not afraid to take it out. It's kind of a rolling thing. They're going to give you continuous updates on these companies. I see updates hit my inbox multiple times per week and maybe even more, 5 times per week during earnings season. There's always updates on there. So if you want a comprehensive service, if you want some help, you know, identifying and doing some analysis on some high growth companies, if you want to become a multi, you can go to Seeking Alpha, look for From Growth to Value, Google it, or go to @FromValue on Twitter. All right, Ryan, let's introduce Amazon.com.
Yeah, the first line of their 10K says, we seek to be Earth's most customer-centric company. So that's, I'm not going to go in. We just simply don't have enough time for me to go into everything they do. But I think they've pretty much lived that motto since their inception. I'm going to basically talk about what I think and what a friend of the show that follows Amazon pretty closely thinks the three main drivers of the business are. So that is e-commerce, AWS, and advertising. And so the e-commerce business, you could almost call their legacy business at this point. This accounts for 39% of US e-commerce spend. And if you subscribe to Amazon Prime, and I haven't been a frequent shopper lately, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you get pretty much anything delivered to your door in 2 days or less. Am I getting that right,
Brett? Most of it's less than one now. They're trying to do same day. So it's been 2 day guaranteed, but in the pandemic it went up a bit, but now they're trying to do 1 day or less if you're in a major city.
Okay. And then people grasp the e-commerce concept, but AWS or Amazon Web Services is another big driver of their business now. And this is their cloud platform. So I guess for anyone that I'll give sort of the brass tacks on cloud, and I'm not a cloud expert by any means, but companies, organizations, or individuals can store or access their data over the internet instead of on a hard drive. That's basically the concept of cloud computing. This makes data more accessible, and it often saves organizations a lot of money. And so it's been a huge driver in terms of profitability for them. It generated $62 billion in revenue for Amazon last year. And even though it only accounts for 13% of Amazon sales, it accounts for 75% of their operating income. And then the last segment that I'll talk about is their advertising business. So since Amazon accounts for such a big chunk of e-commerce sales in the US, obviously getting on search rankings is basically really valuable real estate for sellers. And so sellers are willing to pay up for that. I believe that's where the lion's share of their advertising revenue comes from, but it's a quickly growing segment, but there's also other advertising spots that they own. So I think you can advertise on Alexa. I might be wrong on that, but there's like, think of all the real estate they own. They own
Fire TV. You can, that's one.
Fire TV is one. That's a big one. I don't know. I'm sure there's plenty. There's a lot
of, I mean, the main one is sponsored listings.
Exactly.
On retail. Yeah.
But those are the three main drivers of the business right now. I am certain that they account for the biggest portion of the company's overall top line. And then as far as history goes, I think most people have probably heard this story, but Amazon was founded in 1994 by a man named Jeff Bezos. Brett, I heard you're friends with this guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're best buds. We go to the same restaurant. Yeah. We go to the same restaurants in Bellevue. So, you know, what can I say?
Tell that story.
Yeah. And with this winter, I was at a restaurant in Bellevue, which is where Jeff Bezos lives, and we're close to where Amazon's headquarters is, close to where we live. And I look over and I thought I recognized him, and most people in the restaurant really didn't, because, you know, they're not in like the investing or business community, but I saw him and I was like, that's definitely him. He's with his new girlfriend and then his family. But then when he got up to leave, I went up and shook his hand. And then I said something like, I enjoy your shareholder letters. And then I just walked away. So I didn't, I gave myself like a C. I should have said something about like Lord of the Rings or something funny, but I think I did okay. But so I went up and shook his hand while he was leaving.
Were you shaking? Were you nervous?
I was nervous. Yeah. Yeah. I'm usually, you know, one that doesn't get nervous about stuff like that. But in that case I was, since I've read all, you know, I like his, he's a role model for the business world.
Yeah. Bezos left DE Shaw, which was a quantitative investing firm. I think that's what they categorize it as. It might just be a Wall Street invest. They might have different branches, but I believe that's what he was doing at DE Shaw. And he basically wanted to build a business that sold books over the internet. And so he went out, he moved out to Seattle to start the company. And I believe part of the rationale there was there's a lot of tech talent over there. And the business, I didn't realize how quickly Amazon took off. Originally, it was actually named Kadabra. But apparently a lawyer mistook the name for cadaver. And so they changed the name quickly to Amazon. 1 year after the company was founded, it went public. So Amazon IPO'd in 1995. And I think it was within like 2 months of starting the company that they were selling $20,000. They were generating like $20,000 in sales, either monthly or weekly. It really started growing fast. I can't really do like justice to the whole story, but there's a lot of books written. One good book is The Everything Store by Brad Stone. I recommend reading that. It's just interesting history to see sort of the DNA of Amazon and what the culture's like. And you really get an idea of what, even today, what a well-run business it truly is. That's basically it for the history. AWS was started in what, like the late 2000s?
I believe 04, 06. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. They didn't end up spinning out the financials there until
2015. So they did that in 2015. It wasn't other, just like advertising. And people thought AWS, they're like, oh, it's another, other's growing quickly. And they think it's pretty profitable because like you would think the cloud's profitable or something like that. But there's a lot of theories like, oh, we don't know. But then when they came out and they're like, yeah, this business is an amazing, you know, it's got fantastic margins, even though we're growing. I think the stock went up like 20% after they broke it out. So it was like one of those big moments in Wall Street history.
Yeah, I think AWS is I just Googled it, so I'm cheating. AWS is 2006 and Azure is 2010. And then Google Cloud is newer, obviously. But just FYI for our reader or our listener's sake.
Yeah, that is. And then the guy that gets sort of I guess you could call it a first mover advantage there, just being early to the space. I mean, I don't really know the history of cloud computing. Were they one of the first, were they like a pioneer in the space or were there other?
They invented it. They invented it and they were the first one for 4 years. Yeah, they invented it. And they invented like the outsource model, like the model that is followed today. I believe they invented that. There could be like different, like Salesforce was founded a little earlier, but am I getting, Brad, you might know this a little bit too, but we're kind of showing our cards here. We don't know cloud computing very well. We're hoping actually to get an industry expert on as a deep, for a deep dive on AWS, but really for the show, we're just going to give some brief industry overviews and just say, yeah, cloud computing, big business, very profitable. But yeah, I'll hit industry and competition. It's hard to define because they have so many businesses, but I'll highlight US e-commerce, international e-commerce places they're in, and then cloud services. So the US retail market is $5.5 trillion, so that's the estimate for 2022. Side note, the world kind of economy is driven by the American consumer in some regards. It's very important for Amazon's growth, even though it's their most mature market. And they're actually expanding a lot to try to get more than just e-commerce now, because they own Whole Foods and they're trying to do a lot with that as well. They're competing for base. I mean, except for maybe some things with like Home Depot or a few other retail outlets like jewelry or something like that, Amazon is really competing for all of that spend. Now in Europe, where they operate in a lot of countries, the retail market is €3.2 trillion. India is another company they country they operate in, is that is $1 trillion. India is one of their big markets, and then Europe is their other international ones, and then they're also in Mexico, Japan, and Taiwan, I believe. And then if we want to move out of retail, their cloud market is $300 to $400 billion in spending a year. It depends where you go for your estimates there. And the projections are that that'll grow by about 10% to 15% a year. So large market opportunities. You can see why this is a trillion-dollar plus business and growing really quickly. Brad, do you want to talk management and ownership?
So in terms of management ownership, Andy Jassy did take over the company for Jeff Bezos in 2021. The buyback that they announced this week, the $10 billion buyback, or it won't be this week when our listeners are listening, but it is for us right now. Love to see that. Tax-efficient shareholder returns are always a wonderful thing, and their balance sheet really puts them in a position to do that, but more on that later. Very smart guy, been with the company for decades, climbing the ladder. He was the first CEO, founding CEO of AWS. He's got a 79% Glassdoor rating with 115,000 reviews. So really large sample size that I think we can take seriously. Brian Olavsky has been Amazon CFO since 2015. Again, he's been with the company for 20 years, climbing the ladder. He was with Fisher Scientific before then. And then the new CEO of AWS is Adam Selipsky. And I apologize if I pronounce your name incorrectly. But again, been with the company for 17 years. Former president and CEO of Tableau, so I found that interesting. Another Harvard guy, the C-suite is loaded with them. Board is extremely impressive. I mean, it's a trillion-dollar plus company, so it's not super shocking that the management team is so sparkling, but it is, and really love to see the lengthy tenures and the trend there. Just points to strong culture and a strong community that Amazon's built. But in terms of ownership, and this is as of the most recent proxy, which is now a little bit dated, Jeff Bezos owns 15% of the outstanding company. Vanguard owns 6.4%. BlackRock owns 5.4%. I saw a video on TikTok of somebody ripping into Vanguard and BlackRock saying they own the entire world, but these are shareholders who own Amazon on behalf of, or BlackRock owns them on behalf of shareholders, but I digress. So Jassy's and Wilkes stake. So Jeff Wilkie was seen as Jeff Bezos' right-hand man. He was seen as the next person to kind of take over. They went with Jassy. Wilkie left. I don't know if it was because of that, but it kind of makes sense if it was because of that. He still owns a lot of restricted stock units. He still owns a little bit of a direct common equity stake. Overall, the executive team doesn't really own a lot of shares directly, but there are 14 million total restricted stock units, outstanding as of the company's most recent 10K for about $28 billion in equity that's going to vest starting in 2023. So there is some compensation coming their way to incentivize the 10 years to keep getting longer and longer.
Question is, do you guys think Bezos is would you put him on the Mount Rushmore of best CEOs of all time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would he go number one?
No, probably not. We'll have to see. Like, I think a big question is whether the culture they started can sustain for the next few decades. After that, if that's the case and they're still around, you know, very profitable or some, you know, generating cash, then probably you can put them on there. But as of now, I think the jury's still out. It's only been 25 years. If you're going to be one of the best ever, you got to establish a franchise that's going to be around, I think, for a very long time.
But you could also say he did it quicker than anyone else.
Well, that's true. That's true. That is very true. The quickest, I think.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, Google is later. But either way, sorry, Brad, do you have anything on that? Do you have any thoughts?
That's a debate. That's not a question I can give an objective answer to, but in terms of top CEO ever, he's on the short list for sure. And obviously that's recency bias for me being 24 years old and growing up, watching his fabulous success, not to make Ryan or Brett a little bit steamy through the ears, but I think I'd put Elon Musk up there as well. I will say
Brett probably has the finger on the pulse here the best, since he's best friends with Jeff. So,
well, that's right. Yeah, and I got some more scuttlebutt.
All right, let's hit valuation.
Yeah, valuation is pretty well. It's hard because of all the capital investments they make, which I'm sure we'll talk about in the second half. But it's pretty easy to value since it's not some money losing company. Market cap $1.42 trillion. Ticker is AMZN. Enterprise value is $1.37 trillion. And now that's taking market cap, subtracting out the cash, adding back the debt. I'm going to say that every time, but I'll hopefully just do it quick because I know people will probably get tired of that. EV to operating income, which is enterprise value divided by operating income, is 55. Enterprise value divided by free cash flow is negative. However, it's because they made this heavy reinvestment period over the last 12 to 18 months because of the pandemic. Before the pandemic, they were very profitable from a cash generation perspective. And I should say share count steadily rising. Like Brad was noting, they have about a 3% dilution rate that has been steady over the long term. So not crazy, and maybe that'll balance out now if they do the buybacks, but there is going to be some dilution. All right, Ryan, do you want to hit earnings?
Yeah. So they just wrapped up their 2021 fiscal year, literally last night as of this recording, but it'll be, I think, maybe 4 or 5 days by the time this is out. So in 2021, Amazon had $471 billion in revenue. That was up 22% versus the year prior. They had 42% gross margins, which was up slightly from the year before. And then the interesting part, which Brett sort of alluded to, they had $46 billion in operating cash flow, but they spent $60 billion on capital expenditures. So negative free cash flow for the year. And I think it was in Bezos's, one of his last letters during COVID, he basically said, we're going to start, like, we're not just letting the company generate cash. Like, we are going to pour money into investing back in the business heavily. And you're starting to see that on the cash flow line. But when that happens, they usually reap quite the reward in 3, 4, or 5 year periods after the reinvestment. So that's usually a good sign for shareholders. I will say also, big news, they did a 20-for-1 stock split, which obviously everyone made the joke. So they did a 20-for-1 stock split, and they have done stock splits in the past. And everyone made the joke that the stock jumped because of it, but I think it also jumped because of earnings.
Earnings were, I don't know if you might have misread some earnings were in February.
They had earnings last night. No?
No. Earnings were in February.
Huh. I must have.
I think you misread it as March instead of February, because I believe it would have been like March 9th.
All right. So then a month ago, I guess.
Yeah.
But last night they did announce the stock split and the buyback program, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that was last night. So I got the dates wrong. But the $10 billion buyback there was no ending date on that. So they had a $5 billion open buyback program. They just replaced it with a $10 billion program, no ending date on that. So it's kind of open for them to repurchase shares opportunistically. That's pretty much it for the earnings. Those are, I guess, the main takeaways, that they are reinvesting heavily. And typically that's a good sign for the times to come.
Yeah. And I would say, do you guys think it should have been another zero on there? Like $100 billion buyback program, just because if it's going to be indefinite, like for a company of this size, $10 billion is pretty meaningless.
I think they tend to generate great results when they allocate capital to their existing operations. And they have money to obviously buy back shares, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're slow to start choosing to repurchase shares instead of investing back in their own business.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, Brad, any thoughts on that? And then move into balance sheet if when you're ready.
Yeah, I'll just go right into the balance sheet and liquidity. So the company has $36 billion in cash and equivalents, but it's got another $60 billion in marketable securities. So I'd put accessible liquid assets right almost at $100 billion. But they do have $48 billion in net payables, which it uses to finance its marketplace operations and other parts of the business. It's got $32 billion in long-term debt and another $52.6 billion in long-term lease obligations. These are large numbers, but that's what happens when you build out the largest private market set of infrastructure and assets, or whatever I'm trying to say and can't get across in the world. I mean, obviously, long-term lease obligations are going to be a hefty number. But moving on, interest expense was 7.2% of its operating income in 2021. So not super favorable, but could have just been a timing of payments thing, because according to their 10K, the weighted average rate for 2022, calendar 2022, is going to be 0.65%, which is extremely favorable. So I would trust Amazon to know what their average cost of capital will be for 2022. And that looks very good. So to probably not many people surprised, the balance sheet is yet another strength for the company.
Yeah. Do we think they should pull an Apple? I know it's kind of nitpicky, but should they pull an Apple and take out $100 billion in debt? I feel
what do they need it for?
Buy back $100 billion in stock. That's all Apple needs it for. And their returns, people have been thankful for that. I mean, there's no way Amazon's going to get in trouble. I mean, they're going to start generating $50 billion in cash a year soon once this reinvestment period reverse. They did that in 2019 or maybe 2018. Forget the years. I mean, why? The question is why, and also just why not? Like, they have, why not do it?
But to me, it's like, I think their investment starts at their gross profit line, essentially. Like you could almost call it like growth CapEx, I would say, starts there, because they do a lot of investing through their income statement. They're generating, what is it, probably $200 plus billion in gross profit. Is levering up really going to do that much for them?
I mean, if you can get some 20, 30 notes at 4% and you can buy back stock at a yield you think will be higher over the next few years, I mean, it'll juice returns. I don't know. I think Apple's strategy is very, like, I just think all the big tech companies should be doing this, except maybe Facebook, because they're in a more precarious situation. But that's a debate for another day. Let's hit an ad break and we'll talk more about Amazon. Okay, welcome back. Next up, we have anecdotal evidence. Usually, if it's like a tech business, we don't have any, but this one should be fun. So Brad, what's your anecdotal evidence for us today?
Yeah, so I'm a grad student who still lives at home, and I think my mom gets 5+ packages from Amazon a day. It's we just have a steady flow of packages just coming to the door and ringing the doorbell and pissing off my dogs. And like you probably heard in the background earlier in the show, but it's not, I mean, I have no complaints. I'm not going to rave about its fulfillment and marketplace services, because it's not noticeably better or different than anything else, but the selection obviously is quite immense. So thumb firmly sideways on Amazon versus the competition, but it's extremely convenient. So I guess thumbs up there.
Yeah, I think everyone probably has some experience shopping wise. I'll be honest, I haven't bought anything on Amazon in a really long time. And maybe I'm just not like that much of a shopper to begin with, but I just haven't found, I don't know, the use case for it. Maybe Christmas. I'm sure I bought something around Christmas time, but on a separate, like on a different, as far as use cases for other parts of their business, I look forward to watching the Lord of the Rings show, but at the same time, I kind of question whether some of those expenses are worthwhile and like,
what's the ROI on that? Yeah. Getting all those Lord of the Rings rights.
Or just even like all their Prime Video initiatives.
I think they've improved on that a bit. I really hope they go more into sports because that's kind of something I feel like they can be good at because they're really good at just efficient, you know, stuff where they would just be licensing it. They got Thursday Night Football exclusively now. Brad, any thoughts on the sports stuff? Because I really think they should try to get one of the Sunday games because that would lock people in to Amazon Prime.
I mean, the United States. Took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say they got the Thursday Night Football deal, which is probably going to force me to download the service.
Yeah.
I felt like initially the whole Prime Video thing was just a way for Bezos to get looped into Hollywood.
Yeah, that's what they said in the book. That's what the Brad Stone book says. I mean, it's worked out pretty good. You know, Amazon Prime. I'll have some numbers later of how profitable that is. So I don't think they can complain, but yeah, who knows? Buying that movie studio too, we'll see if that'll be worth it. I don't know what that was, like $9 billion. But back on the retail for anecdotal evidence, personally, I like it a lot. I don't know what really would cause me to leave. Like Ryan was saying, like shopping, I don't really do anything of that there, but like I really enjoy subscribing to like staple foods that I get like every month. You get 5% off, it gets delivered. Sometimes you go overboard and you accidentally get way too much delivered for yourself. But then like staples, like paper towels, toilet paper and stuff. I really like to use that instead of going to the store, mainly because with Amazon Prime, it's free shipping. It's usually very cheap and it's just way, way more convenient. But like shopping around for stuff, it's not the best there. And I think that's the big difference between them and someone like a D2C store. Personally, the only thing I get frustrated with though is when they kind of bombard you with Whole Foods ads in the search results, which you can't get, like it's like a Whole Foods grocery delivery thing. And I get confused and I'm like, all right, I'm going to get this, say this oatmeal or something. And it's like a Whole Foods direct delivery thing with extra fees. I wish they would separate their grocery from their traditional marketplace. And then I do have some scuttlebutt on the advertising business. So last summer, being that we live in the region where Amazon is headquartered, you kind of, you know, see a bunch of people that work for Amazon all the time. I was paired up with someone that worked there in the past for golf. And I found out that he was one of the big VPs of advertising. And I asked him about it. And he said, and this could have been his bias because he was just in the division. He said advertising was a better business than AWS. And I was kind of like, wow. But I think he just said that because AWS is capital intensive. So it might not be as profitable. But then he also said that advertising, and this would have been in 2021, so not too long ago, he said advertising could double profits over or double revenue overnight if they want to, but they just choose not to. So, you know, the people that are bullish on their advertising business, there's your anecdotal evidence. All right. Or Ryan, you have something?
No, I was going to say that. Maybe he's just enthusiastic because it's his role, but I could see that. I could see how I feel like that for a lot of big tech companies. Like I was just thinking the other day, I saw an AWS ad on the back of a bus and I'm like, why? What a waste of money. And then I'm like, well, maybe they're just choosing to like defer profitability or like they're kind of masquerading profitability to either avoid regulators or hint like deter competition of some sort. It feels like they can grow at will.
Yeah. Brad, you got something?
Remember in the Incredibles movie when Dash was kind of like racing on the track meet and Mr. Incredible and the family was like, come in second place because Dash was like, he had super speed and he didn't want anyone to know he had super speed. That's kind of how I think of Amazon right now. They're kind of just pacing themselves to not invite unwanted attention, but they have superpowers that they can turn on whenever they want to.
Yeah. Cause that's what I may have said it wrong, but the guy said that like the higher ups were telling them like, okay, no, we want this much in revenue a year. And they if advertising was on its own, it could have been twice as big just from the demand they were getting, but they didn't turn on the spigot yet.
It's like, and I don't want to go too long on this, but it's like Zuckerberg, I think one time had a quote where he said, I want it to be like, there's levers I can twist where it's like operating income, revenue, like profit, like all the line items on the financial statement, I can just turn them when I want.
Well, Tim Cook said, I don't know about that, pal.
Yeah, he pulled the plug on those levers. But let's go growth opportunities. Brad, what do you have?
Yeah, I just want to say two thumbs up to your future growth opportunity, Ryan. I'm in full support, but I won't spoil it. But the Internet of Things boom, I, this is more of a profit and margin growth opportunity, but it could really allow them to accumulate a lot more automation within the fulfillment processes, even like autonomous vehicles. Could be just a massive cost savings event for them and human capital. I mean, they're one of the largest employer. Are they the largest employer in the United States private market? They must
have at this point. Two. Walmart's one. Walmart's one. I looked it up. Walmart's over 2 million. Amazon's like 1.5 million.
Okay, so just wild numbers. And I think they hired 150,000 workers last holiday season or something ridiculous like that. So it is a massive cost for them. And this would probably be terrible for the labor force and the American economy. Or not the American economy, ex Amazon, but it would be phenomenal for them to sub out these manual processes with Internet of Things and automation and artificial intelligence and all these wonderful buzzwords that we like to invest in.
Yeah, and remember, they pay their workers. Now, there's a lot of news stories about, I don't know, treatment at warehouses. I don't know the exact things about that, union busting, all that stuff, but they pay their workers very well, $18 an hour. Now, and they do the 401k match that's very healthy. And they also do the career path thing where they pay for people's college if they want to kind of expand out of the warehouse. So they invest a ton, like Ryan was saying, investing through the income statement in their workforce. And that's one of their biggest expenses. Ryan, you want to hit your future growth opportunity?
Yeah, selling their Rivian stake is my number one. That's not really my... I don't know. I don't really have a take on Rivian, but they have a huge like mark to market adjustment on their income statement where they have to value their Rivian stake. And Brett,
sorry,
you've been following.
I would say on there, they control Rivian's destiny basically because they have all the truck orders from Rivian. So it's kind of like they can, you know what I mean? Like they have over 100,000 delivery trucks order for Rivian. I think they're doing a bunch of them in India too. So I don't know. Like, it's almost like they're a long-term partner, you know, if you know what I mean. So it's less risky, I think, for Amazon, where they can kind of decide how profitable and how big Rivian's going to get.
Yeah, I don't think they could even sell their stake if they wanted to, and that would probably just destroy it anyways. But it's hard to think of anything new that Amazon hasn't done. I will pose a question at the end of my future growth opportunity, but I'm going to go with AWS. This is probably one of the greatest businesses in the world. It grew revenues 40% year over year this quarter, had 30% operating margins. Like I said, I think it did $60+ billion in revenue for the year for Amazon. A few sort of highlights from this quarter, some notable customer adds. NASDAQ, the exchange, said it plans to migrate its markets to AWS with the goal of becoming the world's first fully enabled cloud-based exchange. And then Meta, so Facebook, selected AWS as its long-term strategic cloud provider to accelerate AI R&D. I don't know if that's just like a segment that they've dedicated to it, but it's a pretty big vote of confidence, I imagine. And there's so many businesses run on there. There's plenty of votes of confidence. So I think that's probably going to be no surprise here. One of the biggest drivers of returns over the coming decade. Question, and this is unrelated, but what do you guys think of their cloud gaming news? I don't know if you saw this, but they launched, I think it's called Luna or something like that.
Right. Only seen headlines. Brad, do you have any thoughts on that?
The Luna, was it called? Or Luna?
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazon Luna.
Luna.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think they would probably, they'll probably lose to Microsoft. Microsoft has a big advantage there, but who knows? Google, is trying to do it. It's early days.
What do you think just broadly of their gaming investments?
strange.
Do you think it's worthwhile?
I mean,
I don't know. I think we're both kind of in the, I don't know.
I think Bezos always talks about, like, if I can invest, what's the analogy? Like, I can invest a certain amount of money and have a certain probability of these returns. I'll take that bet every single time. This kind of seems to me like one of the bets that may not work out as well for him, but he's willing to make those to identify the ones that will work, which is where AWS came from and where Amazon Fire came from. And yeah.
Twitch has kind of fallen off a bit. I know that's different than their game. I mean, they put out a good game, I think, but it's just not a needle mover for them. They spent like a decade developing games now, and they're finally starting to become a decent studio. But unless they become the cloud gaming platform, which who knows, they could be. I think Microsoft will probably win, but who knows? If they become the cloud gaming platform, that will be material for them. But just as a studio, and with Twitch, which is kind of just plateauing and really getting some big competition from YouTube and Facebook, I don't think it's as material for Amazon.
All right, what's your future growth opportunity?
Like you guys said, there's a ton, but I just want to highlight raising the price of the Amazon Prime and what that does to this business. So they recently did a $20 price rise for the annual one from $119 to $139. And that will bring in, assuming they have 150 million subs, $3 billion more a year in pure profit. So that's, you know, gives them wiggle room to say reinvest into more delivery. It can also just be, you know, increase their margins. And I really think that they have an easy path to doing this about 3 to 4 more times over the next decade, especially because most Amazon Prime accounts are family ones and are really more than one person. Anything else on that, guys, or should we move to highlights and lowlights?
Let's go highlights and lowlights. Brad, what do you have?
Yeah, want to reiterate, I love when teams are in place for decades. I know Bezos stepped down as CEO, but the entire or seemingly the entire management team has climbed ladders all the way up through the company to get where they are today. And I really just I love to see that. Lowlights are very tough, so I'm gonna nitpick and come up with some lame lowlights because there are really not, other than maybe regulatory stuff. But Google Cloud's finding more market share, Bezos leaving. Maybe Amazon, their loud public support for cannabis could turn them into a federal government kind of adversary or enemy, maybe. But again, I'm reaching very far to try and come up with these, and there's not really a lot of red flags to speak of here.
Yeah, I had to reach for lowlights myself. I guess highlights. It's probably one of the moatiest business in the world. And I'm saying moat, like MOAT. It just has incredibly high barriers to entry. And thinking about when you look at that CapEx figure and compare it to the second largest e-commerce provider, which is Shopify, it puts in perspective the scale of their business. I also like Jassy so far, and I like the overall culture. Even though it's also overused here, there's tons of optionality. And that's kind of been a big, I guess, thing for them the whole time they've been public, is you've been saying, well, they could also do this, they could also do this. And so far they have. Lowlight, the only one I could really think of, that the one that's actually potentially deterring me from investing, is just the size of the company. And I know people talk law of large numbers all the time, and it never seems to come to fruition every big tech earnings report. They have to be close to e-commerce saturation at some point. Like, they can't just keep, I don't know, like, how big can their e-commerce business get? Maybe it's much bigger than current.
If e-commerce continues growing in excess of GDP, I think PayPal is at or expecting like 10% e-commerce growth this year. So they don't really need to take a lot of market share to still grow in excess of GDP. But I know that's not the expectation for Amazon shareholders. They want a lot more growth than that. But just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I fall as well. 10% growth in retail seems very reasonable to me. But yeah, the historical growth rates have been more 20% plus for retail. Anything else, Ryan? Should I move to mine?
No, you're good.
Okay. Yeah. Same with you, Ryan. I think they have tremendous competitive advantages. I think we're all aware of those. And it's kind of weird that both AWS and retail have the scale advantage, and the switching costs and all that type of stuff, they're very similar, even though they're completely different business. You have a logistics moat and then the cloud tailwind. So cloud, I mean, the cloud tailwind is amazing. Like it seems like it's a guarantee. It's going to grow at 15% a year for this next decade. And then I do like their culture of focusing on long-term cash flows. They're not an earnings per share company, which is great. They're focusing on cash generation, which I like as a shareholder. Lowlights though, I have a few that you guys didn't have. Well, I guess you guys had the stuff about worrying about the bloat from being just a large and disjointed business. I worry about the true profitability of retail. Now, could that be saved by advertising? Sure. But man, are they have a lot of expenses right now. There's a tougher competitive environment in international markets, especially in India, where they're investing a ton of money. I think that's just going to be really difficult over there, and it's not growing as quickly and as I think as a lot of people expected. And then lastly, Alexa and some of the other bets I think are quite dumb, but a lot of people said that about Amazon's projects over the years. So, you know, if it has a 10% chance of working out, like Brad was saying, then maybe it's fine, but they are spending, I think I saw a Bloomberg report that they're spending $4 billion a year on the Alexa division. And that's just, that could be $4 billion in profits. And is it going to have a good return on invested capital? Gosh, I really doubt it. All right, let's move into bull case. Brad, what's your bull case for Amazon?
Well, Alexa actually just integrated with Teladoc Health, which is a position of mine. Wow. So that would be the bull case. I'm just kidding. You guys covered the quantitative bull case I'm seeing pretty well, so I won't repeat that. Just really plainly and simply, the bull case is that Amazon continues to perform exactly as admirably as it's performed over the last several decades. Proof of concept is as concrete and clear as day as it gets. And the bull case is that continues on well after Jeff Bezos retires, which he just did.
Yeah, I think more of the same basically is the bull case. I put some numbers on it just to kind of boil it down. I think if they reach $1 billion in revenue, which is a little more than a double from here.
A trillion.
It's a trillion. And they can get to a normalized free cash flow margin of about 15%, which I don't think is too unrealistic. They'll be doing $150 billion in free cash flow at 20 times that. Their annual free cash flow, that's a $3 trillion market cap. I think that's, unless the stock has moved today, I think that's a double from here. And all those numbers seem realistic within the next 5 to 7 years. I don't think that much, if nothing changes, if they just keep doing what they're doing, this will probably be a fine investment.
Yeah, I agree. I worry about law of large numbers for retail a bit because it's going to, you know, they got to execute now and kind of in-person stuff and stuff like that. But I think with cloud, there's no real concerns with that. I have the same thing kind of as Ryan. And if anyone's like, whoa, 15% free cash flow margins, that sounds absurd. They got close to 10% free cash flow margins in 2019. And now AWS and advertising are making up a bigger percentage of revenue. I think 15% free cash flow margin is fairly doable. If you think, okay, I'll put on a different number here too. If you think they can get to 10% free cash flow margins, we're basically sitting at an EV, which is enterprise value to free cash flow, which is enterprise value divided by free cash flow of 29 right now. So basically I'm just taking their current last 12 months revenue numbers and slapping on a 10% free cash flow margin, and then using that compared to their enterprise value. And then if you believe they can get to a 15% free cash flow margin, like Ryan was saying, the EV to free cash flow ratio is below 20, which feels very, very cheap. In either of those scenarios where you have a 10% or 15% free cash flow margin, I think like you do great. I mean, you're really just kind of banking on revenue growth over the next whatever years. And if it can be 10% plus, it's going to be a good investment. All right, bear case, Brad. I know it's very hard for everyone here because everyone in the world is so bullish on Amazon, but what do you think the bear case is?
Sure. So in the past, I've invested in direct to consumer brands. I'm thinking Canada Goose, which I no longer own, but they and several other brands with any kind of brand equity have been shifting aggressively to direct to consumer businesses just because of the vast gross profit margin boost it gives to their businesses, their operations. So I've read about vendors like Allbirds and Nike pulling their gear off of Amazon. just because of counterfeits and copycats that were to be candid, pissing them off. And if that continues, if these large brands continue to embrace this direct-to-consumer transformation, then that could be problematic for what is the largest segment of its business, at least by revenue, not by operating income. But I think that's the bear case, and it's not all that. It's quite realistic, honestly. It's already happening. I just don't think it'll matter for Amazon over the long term. They've just got so much momentum. But something to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that one, but that probably is, I guess, the biggest threat to their e-commerce business. But I would have said that 2 years ago, and it hasn't seemed to affect them. I honestly can't think of a very realistic bear case where, like, what's going to stop AWS? What's going to stop, like, is e-commerce going to decline? It doesn't feel very, that doesn't feel very realistic. Maybe they just spend too much. Like, and
yes, even, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe the return on their current, like their other bets actually bogs down cash flow enough that this is a sub market performer.
Yeah. I mean, that's one for me as well. I think margins could be a concern, say the labor stuff. Which again, like from an investment perspective, we're just looking at labor, like objectively, if that hurts them a ton, if say supply chain costs really hurt them, because I mean, they've had to do some tough stuff with that. Materials costs are huge for them. That could really hurt margins. And if that sustains itself over the next decade, their margins could be hit. And then combine that with people partnering with Shopify and then the Shopify clones out there. If they can slowly pick away at the retail advantage, which I kind of doubt they can do because the logistics stuff is just so insurmountable. There's a chance that the e-commerce and retail businesses are tough. But again, with AWS, I think this kind of shows that we don't know enough about the cloud business, but it's really hard to see a bear case for AWS. And I think we're all in the same boat there. But let's move into the final thoughts, more or less interested. Brad, you own some big tech, but I believe you do not own Amazon. So what are your final thoughts after looking at them?
No, I own Facebook. I can't believe I'm saying it, but it's not within my kind of niche of investing. I mean, I do own Facebook, but I also see that as still a kind of almost, it's weird to think about it at whatever it is, $600 billion or something, but as a younger growth stock, and a more speculative company than Amazon, which is kind of where I skew. I can't say less interested because it's just such an incredible company. So I'm going to say more interested, but I'm probably never going to own it just because of how massive it is already.
Yeah, I don't know. Like if I didn't care about investing, I would probably just buy some and close my eyes for the next decade. But the only thing really deterring me is that like owning it just doesn't seem that fun. Making money will probably be fun, but it's not like, I kind of like the part of investing where like I found something unique and was able to do it like a little bit. I know there's no points for originality, but I kind of like being invested in companies where not everyone's invested.
No, yeah, I'm in the same boat. It's just, I mean, look, it's not even for, it's for enjoyment. I mean, I'm more interested. I think everyone follows all the big tech companies, at least glances at their earnings reports, especially because they can affect so much of the other markets. But I mean, if I was say older, investing wasn't something I wanted to do with my life as kind of the industry I was in, it was just something I was saving for retirement. I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with owning Microsoft, Google, and Amazon and going to sleep. I mean, those platforms, they have dominance. Brad, you have something to add here?
Yeah, and I agree. I almost think at that point, just buy QQQ and make it even more boring and drama-less for yourself. Which is kind of, I think, why the three of us are saying less interested, because we see it as somewhat similar to index fund investing, which is funny because it's one company, but it's just such a massively important company it's sort of true.
Yeah, it kind of goes in the same boat as me with Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. Those are the big tech companies I'm very interested in just because I think they have really long-term with by saying the cliche, durable competitive advantages. And yeah, if Amazon got cheap enough, maybe it would get very interesting. But I'll let the returns go to someone else, and I'll play with the stuff with market caps below $100 billion, maybe to our detriment. But that's just gonna that's just how it's gonna be. All right, stock for next week, Ryan. Do you have one? I know we were kind of, you know, this is a hectic week for us. Did you have a choice? If not, I got something in my mind. But if you have one,
two. I have two, and I want to let you guys kind of vote. So one would be Guidewire Software, which is like it's business to business software for the insurance industry. So property and casualty insurance. It's kind of like a pretty sticky software business from what I understand, and they're making a shift to cloud. Or Celsius Holdings, the energy drinks, kind of been looking into them a little bit as well. Which one?
Celsius.
Yeah, let's do Celsius. More okay. Fun for the podcast.
All right, Celsius Holdings it is.
Yeah, B2B insurance software provider just doesn't sound quite as fun.
It could be a great investment. I mean, that sounds like, you know, something boring that's going to grow forever, but energy drinks will definitely be more fun. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Remember, we are not financial advisors. Anything we say on the show is not formal advice or recommendation. However, Ryan and I are general partners at Arch Capital. Arch Capital clients may hold securities discussed in this podcast. Give us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We're going for 100 on Spotify. Very, very close. Takes you about 5 seconds to do it on our homepage. So make sure you do that. And then we'll stop hammering it home at the end of each episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.